This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivisodhi. In the studio for his monthly show, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant, orthopedic surgeon. And we're discussing three different articles today. We're discussing inactive teens having weaker bones. We're going to be exploring runners with a low BMI and are they susceptible to stress fractures. And last of all, mobile apps to monitor foot strike patterns for runners. Welcome to the show. How are you today, Dr. Harjit?
I'm great. Oh, you're doing three today.
Yes, we are. I mean,
challenging.
Very quickly. Okay, we're going to start with the first article, okay? Researchers at the Vancouver Coastal Health Research Institute, they have now found that inactive teens have weaker bones than those who are physically active. Now, what did you think of that? It makes sense.
Yeah,
on the
logical
surface, it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, but if you look at the medical perspective, we now know for a fact that the bone strength is a combination of things. That means you actually have the architecture of the bone and the amount of bone that you have at any particular time. And we also know that teenage is when the bone is actually being built up. Now, if you don't partake in activities that stimulate that growth, I guess you run the risk of having bone which is a little bit weaker than someone who's active.
And is there a critical time in the teenage years as to when this critical time really is?
Okay, so let's look at, if we look at bone development, okay, and the build-up of strength particularly, you start building up strength from the time that you are born right up to the age of about 30. And we know that teenage years is when rapid growth is occurring and when there are a lot of physiological and physical changes to the body. So I guess the age of puberty, 11 to 16, this age where the growth is most rapid is probably the time that the bone is deposited most.
For both males and females?
Yeah. Now, definitely for both males and females. Now, as you age a little bit more, maybe in your 20s, the peak for males is definitely higher than that of a female. But the pattern at which it's actually happening is the same. The graph is the same. It's just that it's a steeper graph for males. But both of it stops at around the age of 30. And after 30, the game is to just keep your bone amount of bone at a particular static level before it starts going down and causing osteoporosis.
So what do we do besides just moving? Is that enough to actually ensure strong bones?
Yeah, I mean, moving is good, but you actually have to classify the kind of movement. The definition is that the movement or exercise that you do has to be weight-bearing because bone is not just a piece of plastic and, you know, having muscles attached to it for movement. It's living tissue. So it responds to stress. Stress being not mental stress, it means that as we do activities, certain parts of the bone are loaded, okay, by gravity, by body weight, and the body senses this and builds bone in those areas. This is why if you have a person or a patient who's immobilized, for a period of time, they tend to lose bone. So weight-bearing exercises is key. Whether it's running, brisk walk, it doesn't matter. Understand that it has to be weight-bearing.
I think a lot of us misunderstand weight-bearing because we associate that with lifting weights.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so as you said, just running. But does this activity have to be structured? Does it have to be organized to be effective? Meaning, does it have to be consistent?
Okay, as we look at, okay, exercise for a healthy heart, they said, okay, 30 minutes, moderate exercise, 3 to 4 times a week. It probably is similar for building up bone. As long as you exercise, as long as you do things which are weight-bearing, you build bone, especially during the rapid age at which you are building bone, teenage.
So even if you dance at home, you know, you chase the dog, you hop, you skip, all of that is weight-bearing?
Yes, everything works.
Okay, yeah. All right then. And with children who are now more and more sedentary, what's going to be the consequence of that?
I think the first thing is we need to take the iPads away.
I know. Okay. It's easier said than done. Yeah. It's not happening.
Yeah, it's not. Because now I ask my patients, what sports do you play? And they tell me FIFA. No, it really happened. So it caught me for a few seconds. But I think it's quite an unhealthy practice. Because keeping active doesn't only work physically, it also works on your mind, right? And if you partake in a team sport, then it also develops interaction. Now, if you are very computer-based, it's okay. You can say that you're playing multiplayer games or something, but it doesn't work. There's no proper physical interaction. There's no physical activity. So you do deteriorate on a physical health standpoint, but I think social interaction, mental health also suffers.
So if you do not, if you're not active enough and don't carry out these weight-bearing exercises, especially in those crucial years of the teenagers, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, you run the risk of maybe developing something later.
Okay, like what? Is it all fractures that you are more susceptible to?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at osteoporosis where, most discussions go to, okay, we have to understand that it is something related to multiple factors. Okay, you can have a genetic predisposition to this. There are diseases that cause it. But we know while we cannot avoid things that we cannot change, there are a lot of things that we can change. We can change diet. We can change exercise. We can change keeping optimum body weight. And we can change the fact that we know if we are at risk, get it detected early and treat it. So it's all got to do with preventing a fracture, like you said. The end goal is to prevent a fracture, particularly fractures at the hip. So these are the main mortality and morbidity-causing fracture.
So when will these issues surface, this consequence of having weak bones? Is it just in older age?
Yeah, it generally happens at an older age. There is a small subset. I'm talking about the primary osteoporosis. If you have, in a female, if you have your menopause at an early age, maybe 45, you tend to have the onset of the rapid bone loss because you lose your estrogen at an earlier age. So it can be bad and you can develop fractures.
And so we're only concerned about fractures.
Yeah, so by definition, the reason why you treat osteoporosis is to prevent fractures. But look at this. If you have someone who's been making unhealthy health decisions all the way along, it's not only going to be the bones, it's going to affect other parts of the body.
So your
also.
Diet as well plays a big role.
Definitely.
And I've always wondered, if we know this, why then carry out a study to tell us what we already know? I mean, this study was carried out. 319 teenagers were actually assessed. But why even bother if we already know?
I think the studies helped us understand the problem. Now, we try to effect behavioral changes or lifestyle changes at ages which we can mold to a certain extent. And we do see culture changing. We are more sedentary now. Teenagers tend to be sedentary unless they probably have been put into sports and exercise early or they have parents who do that. So the study is to see, okay, if this happens at this crucial age of development, which is the logical next step, right? You know you have a problem as you age, and this is the problem where you are building bone best and fastest. Is being active at these ages going to affect the chances of having lesser of a problem later? So I think the studies are relevant. Continually, studies will be carried out because this study is in Canada,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
Now, a Canadian, a European, an Australian, and an Asian per se, they are all totally different. The food that we eat, the kind of exercise that we get, the sunlight that we are exposed to, they are not exposed to sunlight, which is important because vitamin D is developed that way and then it's activated in the liver and kidneys and, further. So we have to do very population-based studies.
Okay.
So we get good results and we can give good advice.
So do you think this is the same in Malaysia? What's your gut feeling?
I guess if you look at the big picture is probably the same. But then you have to modify it based on the diet, the kind of activity level at least. Because in Malaysia, I see a shift from having totally sedentary youngsters to youngsters who are now, to a certain extent, taking part in sports. Because the parents, the teachers, the coaches, the grandparents now are mindful about this. They probably have the problem now, the grandparents, and someone's told them that, you know, you build bone up to the age of 30. And they say, oh my God, I go and tell this to my teenage grandchild.
Okay. And can you just go through the vitamin D, the importance of vitamin D? Because more and more studies are coming out that Malaysians are vitamin D deficient, actually.
Yeah, I think we worry. We have probably, there's a dietary intake of vitamin D. And then as you expose yourself to the early morning sunlight, and that depends on where you stay and what the weather conditions are, and it's around this 9:30 to 10:30 kind of sunlight, okay? You can form vitamin D via the skin, and that's actually carried to the liver, to the kidney, and it gets activated. Now, vitamin D helps calcium absorption. Recent studies even show that in the older patient, vitamin D supplements helps in balance. So while you have weaker bones, yes, we try to treat that. It also prevents you from falling because you have better balance. And we know for a fact that calcium is not only important for the bones, it's also important for so many other protein, metabolism, clotting of blood. So there's so many factors. We are an organism of which calcium, vitamin D is very, very important.
Okay. So all around, your message would be what? Stay in this...
No, I think understand that this is a problem of modern lifestyle and aging. All right? Understand that the way it happens has been actually researched extensively. There are things we can change, there are things we can't, but if we work on things that we can change, a healthy lifestyle, exercising, good diet, supplements if need be, and then you get well.
Go out in the sun for a bit.
Yeah, that's difficult, so I don't really tell them that.
Really?
Yeah, if you're staying in my hometown, then it's easy, right? I mean, here we are on the road and we are in the office.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, walk out for lunch, cycle to work. You do that sometimes, don't you?
I like the cycle to work
part. I know, okay. Coming up, our next article will be about runners with a low BMI. Are they more susceptible to stress fractures on the bigger picture? BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasothi. It's Health and Living. Now, in our next article, researchers at The Ohio State University have found that female runners with a BMI, a body mass index, below 19 are at a higher risk for stress fractures than those with normal or even high BMIs. Are you saying that it is okay if I'm overweight, Dr. Ajit?
I don't think it's like this. It's like this. Research has also said that if you have a slight build, okay, that means you are one of those, you know, thin, small-sized lady, your onset of osteoporosis is earlier. We know that.
So smaller
frame. Smaller build, smaller frame, thin, you know, the kind that a lot of people want to be, okay. Second is that they have quantified it as your BMI of 19. Mm-hmm. to be at risk. Okay. Now, if we look at the incidence of density or quality of the bone to a fracture, I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you have strong bones, the chances of fracture is lesser. I mean, it doesn't matter if you have a motor vehicle accident, then it doesn't really matter. You probably fracture it anyway. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the stress fractures, if you are a runner, everything given equal, okay, that means you are wearing a good quality footwear, you are running appropriately, your warm-up is good, your mileage is not high enough to stress out, your rest and play cycle is good, then someone who has a low bone density is definitely prone to a fracture than someone who has a normal bone density.
So why
that's not rocket science.
Correct. But then it doesn't mean that if my BMI is below 19, that I have lesser quality bone.
I think it's statistics. If you have a BMI 19, then you run the risk of potentially having weaker bones. And the bones tend to be a little slender. So they always speak that in runners, you always have the metatarsal stress fracture. And it's always the second metatarsal. And if we time and time again tell everyone, it's not only the density of the bone, it's the length of the metatarsal compared to the first toe and the kind of footwear that you use, the way you run and all that. So if all things being equal, density is important.
Okay, so it all really depends. So many factors are taken into consideration.
Yeah, but I mean, when you want to spin research, I mean, it's not spin. I mean, if you want to cone down, that's a nicer word, kinder word. If you want to cone down to particular thing, you have to ensure that everything else is equal. Then you only study that particular thing.
What is an average BMI for the average woman?
I think normal is considered, 22.5 is right median, okay? So I guess it's around that. We have Malaysians who are very slender. Those are the ones who tend to be about 19, 18. And I mean, while when you're a teenager, it doesn't seem to matter. But as you get older, we know that these are factors that increase your chance of having osteoporosis. So it is an issue.
So I suppose when you look at the calculation of BMI, it's your height and your weight that's taken into consideration.
Yeah, it's in combination.
Yeah, so if you are shorter, then the BMI is probably going to be lower.
Yeah.
Okay, and hence what you're actually
Not really. It has to be a combination of the weight over the height squared.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're going to be taller, obviously you're at advantage. You can have a higher optimal weight. Because it's appropriate to structure.
Okay. Why in particular do women need to pay heed to this study?
I think...
What about the boys?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. We have to not consider this as a problem of the women. It is actually a problem of both genders. The thing is that the difference in bone development is... you have a higher peak in the male, okay? And the way it moves down later is equal right up menopause. Men don't have a chemical menopause, so to speak. Now, when you have menopause occurring, you then have a rapid drop in bone quality, architecture and all that. And that's for the first 5 years of menopause. Following that, you have what they call senile loss of bone. That's with aging. So the men just gain the advantage of a higher peak and the no rapid loss for that 5 years. Otherwise, it's the same. Men also can have osteoporosis. That is why in the screening programs that we advocate, you know, if you are above 65 or a man above 70, they say, go get your BMD screened. And people are doing it at a younger age.
Okay. And the fact that runners are very lean, does that not mean also that there's a chance the BMI will be lower?
I guess definitely. Because when you are lean, now, the bone is built not only by calcium. It's a three-dimensional structure. There's a protein coat to it. There are a lot of other things going on around. And everything has to function in concert to make good music. Now, the idea is if you are lean, your protein intake is not keeping up with the amount that you burn, then we know for a fact that the structure is not good.
Okay.
That's how I think you put yourself at risk.
Sure. So, and the study also said you're not just prone to injuries, but... they found that women who suffered these stress fractures as a result of the low BMI took longer to recover from them compared to other runners.
I mean, it's difficult to agree on that because having a low BMI doesn't affect
recovery.
It may increase your chance of fracture, but if you keep to your protein intake and your healing potential is good, it heals the same. The only thing it's obviously going to heal as a weaker bone than, you know, someone of a better bone quality.
Bone quality. Okay.
Healing time is probably the same.
Okay. So if you do have a low BMI, what can you do to minimize this risk of stress fractures?
Yeah. I mean, you know you have a low BMI. Okay, mm-hmm. Fine. All right. If you watch the other things, your rest play cycle, the way that you are running, the kind of footwear that you wear, and running technique, these are things that actually minimize your risk. So we cannot be coned down only on the fact that you have a low BMI.
Okay, so just be aware that, if you
are...
Sometimes
you get foot pain after a run, mm-hmm. and you find that this pain troubles you over a few days, the area is a bit swollen, you're not too sure, get it checked out.
Okay.
At times, you can even have an X-ray, which is normal. So, you know, if I have a patient who's a runner, slightly built lady, and she comes to me, not much of an injury, been training much, much more than usual, having pain classically at that foot area, X-ray is normal. Sometimes I advocate a scan.
Being conscious that you're of a smaller frame, as you mentioned earlier, in those crucial teenage years, as we were talking about earlier, about building good bone quality, if you do recognize that and if you do proper bone, weight-bearing exercises at that crucial stage, will that
protective.
Help you later on?
Yeah, that's definitely protective because it will help you stimulate the structure of bone up to that crucial age of 30 with a good diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tend to see that the teenagers, the lean ones, they don't eat. I mean, there's no protein intake. How do you build anything?
Okay.
So you can't be too active without actually taking proper nutrition.
Okay. So going back to teenagers, last start that weight-bearing exercises.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it really helps later on in life. Moving on to the third article. Now, this article is about a mobile app that monitors foot strike patterns. What else? What next? These are researchers in Hong Kong. They have developed this mobile biofeedback device for foot strike pattern modification for injury prevention as well as rehabilitation in runners. What did you think?
Wow. Okay. technology is going into every facet of our life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there will be a time that we go to the toilet and they'll say, okay, if you've got blood in your poo.
Yes.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah. Now, if we look at it this way, previously we have people with foot pain and now you can walk into a shopping center, stand on a device and they tell you, there's red spots here, bad pressure, yellow spots here, inappropriate pressure and there's something and they give you an insole. Okay. Now look at this. This is the next step. It's dynamic. You're moving. You're not statically standing. You know, when we do research, we tend to ask people to run also. So we know the biomechanics of the foot. Now, this is good. Okay, in the sense that it tells you whether you are running well, but how much is it going to help the average Joe, okay, or the recreational runner? This is when you are a good runner and you want to take it to the next level, or you are running a lot, you are an elite runner and you want to optimize where, you know, the last 2-3 seconds matter. And when you intensify your workup, and this actually helps you prevent injury.
But how much do we know now about the runner's foot when it hits the ground?
Oh, we know a lot and we don't know a lot because everything keeps changing. Okay, previously, we were just dealing with the conventional heel strike running, you know, which you get with normal footwear. And then came the so-called barefooted or midfoot, forefoot strike. I think that came about because we found that a lot of people had heel problems and looking at people who ran barefooted, you know, some they keep on saying the Maasai people, they run barefooted, they don't have foot problems, so to speak. We found that, okay, maybe this is an unnatural way of running. But we are mostly shoe short. Okay, in Malaysia, we are barefooted, maybe at home, some people not at all. So I think that if you feel that, you know, the midfoot, forefoot stance of running or, you know, is a more natural way of running, you optimize muscle endurance, prevent fatigue, and you feel it solves your problems, well and good. but always do it mindful that we know that that helps, but we don't know whether that's the holy grail.
But then again, it says that biomechanical analysis shows that midfoot strike is an optimal pattern.
Yeah.
So should we all?
Yeah, it's an optimal pattern. But you ask me to do it, I can't do it. Because it will take a lot of changes, a lot of time. And otherwise, when I'm walking, it's still a heel strike. The moment you wear a shoe, it's going to be a heel strike. So unless you run barefooted.
Why is a midfoot strike so difficult to attain?
No, I think it's technique. The first few parts, you have to be very mindful.
It's the shoes, I think, yeah. When we introduced the shoes, we all changed our way of...
Yeah, but you see, the newer shoes, they are extremely flexible, they are thin, and the point of flexion when you run tends to be different. It's no longer cushioned at the heel a lot because they know that that's not how you're going to strike. I think this is something that I've been reading on for years and years. There's always a little bit difference. It seems to be going in a circle currently.
Okay, all right. Do you think
now they're in between.
Oh.
Maybe 2 years ago it was like, okay, you know, this midfoot thing is the best thing in the world. Then slowly came around and now it's coming back that way.
Again, what's the annual injury risk for a regular runner?
Some sort of injury, probably about 80%. Minor injuries, nothing major. I think in a runner who is extremely conscientious in the way he does things, probably some small overuse injury, like, you know, an iliotibial band syndrome, you know, the runner's knee, that kind of thing happens. Mm-hmm. They go for a longer run, they have a problem with their nails, you know. It might get loosened off. Those kind of stuff. Major things, very rare.
So coming back to this app, it provides real-time information about foot strike patterns over the whole running bout and real-time feedback through a specially designed this smartphone app. I'm sure there are things
It's definitely going to be costly.
Yep.
Okay. Now, the second thing is going to be how are you going to use that to, you know, it's a cost-benefit ratio,
yes.
Right? I'm going to spend this amount of money and it's going to benefit me for what? Is it just that I know I'm running well, mm-hmm. okay? Or I've always been having a problem and now that I use this app, the problem goes away. That's
it's like
excellent.
A wearable gadgets at the moment, isn't it? It tells you how many steps, how many, you know, floors you've taken, how many kilometers you've walked in a day, your heart rate and all of that. So after a while, it becomes a so what thing again.
Not really. I think if you use the app for the sake of using the app just because it's in your phone, it's not going to help you. If you use it knowing very well that, okay, this amount of steps is this distance, this is my idea of an exercise in my busy lifestyle, a bit logical. If I'm going to go for a run, I know that, okay, this is where I need to keep my heart rate to burn, this is where I build endurance and all that. It's fine. But, you know, we have so many apps there. We just put it on. At the end of the day, we have a look at it. Okay, I've done. So if you know that you're supposed to do 7,500 steps and you're only doing 2,000, you're in trouble. don't say that, oh, I'm putting on weight and watching what I eat. So you know. The whole cycle is not good enough.
It's a reality check, I suppose. Yeah. But where do you see gaps in an app like this?
I see a lot of gaps in the sense that the use of the app for me and the use of the app for someone who's much more active, you know, the amount which they gain from the information is going to be different. You also have to understand the app very, very well. But I think this is the way forward. I mean, there are going to be things where, you know, the app will tell you. It's just like, you know, nowadays, you know, when you go in an airplane, the guy hardly flies the plane. Mm-hmm. And it's safe because everything is locked in. So this probably will keep you safer.
How will you come in and be a part of this ecosystem? Somebody comes to you and says, you know, yeah, it's calculated my foot strike patterns. Is that something you would depend on?
I probably will tell him I don't know. Okay, but if you look at it, how we know the pattern of injury, and we often ask you how intense do you exercise, the way you do it and all that, to try and get a come between of both your symptoms and what's happening. And I guess if we look at the app, we will be able to also look at what has been the time of rest when you have a problem. Say, I get someone who uses the app, and when he has breaks of, say, 2 days, there's no symptom. And now the app shows that these areas, you know, he has a problem. Then I know, okay, it's because of a lack of rest.
Helps so with those the kind history. Of things, yeah. Helps with the history taking, I suppose. Yeah. Okay. What would be your message from, inactive teens to runners with a low BMI and, of course, the mobile app?
Wow. Okay. So I think technology is going to help us keep safe, exercise better, and continue being able to do that for the longest of time. But we have to understand the basics. The base of the pyramid still remains that there are conditions that will happen over time. One example being osteoporosis and low, BMI. They call that, bone mineral density.
Okay.
Now, we know that keeping a healthy lifestyle is a work towards preventing these kind of problems. And if technology with apps and all keeps us going and being able to do it safer, then I guess that's the best take-home message.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.